Hello, this is Jennifer Wolf, and I'm the Executive Director of the International Association of Industrial Accident Boards and Commissions, also known as the IAIABC. You're listening to the IAIABC's podcast, Accidentally. Since 2015, Accidentally has been exploring policy, practice, and trends within the occupational health, safety, and workers' compensation communities. I am hopeful Accidentally gives you a broader view of our industry and that these episodes spark conversation and debate amongst listeners. You can listen or download our podcast each month at iaiabc.org/podcast or find us on your favorite podcast network. Today, I'm excited to continue a conversation that we began at the Forum 2021. And that conversation was on diversity and inclusion. Workers' compensation is a business that serves people. And in order to do that better, we must seek to expand our understanding of the experience and circumstances of those we serve. Joining me for this conversation are Erin Bishop, who is the Alternative Dispute Resolution Department Supervisor, and Debbie Blevins, who is a Deputy Commissioner. Both Erin and Debbie are with the Virginia Workers' Compensation Commission. Erin and Debbie, thank you for joining me on Accidentally. I'm really excited to share the work that the Virginia Workers' Compensation Commission has begun on diversity and inclusion.
Thanks for having us, Jen.
Yes, we're so glad the IA is continuing this conversation. Thank you.
Erin, could you tell me a little bit more about the factors that motivated the Workers' Compensation Commission in Virginia to begin these conversations last year?
Well, there were several factors that led us to begin these conversations, one of which many people experienced, and that was the death of George Floyd. The death of George Floyd on May 25th led to several protests in Richmond, Virginia, which is where the commission is located. Most of these protests were peaceful. They were peaceful marches and peaceful gatherings day and night. Week in and week out, they were in front of our headquarters, which is in downtown Richmond, Virginia. In fact, our building was even vandalized at one point. But between the protests outside of our front door, just showing up to gather with one another to talk about what had happened, the death of George Floyd, and the news and social media coverage were some of the external factors that led us to this conversation. Additionally, there were individual conversations that people were having. Debbie and I had many. Our own staff, our small department of about 10, had these conversations, and different members of the commission of different races and different positions also had some more one-off conversations, if you will. We had a scheduled town hall meeting early in June, and this was initially to discuss the pandemic and our new remote working environment through the quarantine. And it was during this initial town hall meeting when we had a specific request from a staff member to talk about what was happening in Richmond, Virginia and in the nation. So there was that specific request as well that the commission talk about it. You know, they said, what are you going to do about this? It's happening all around us. What do you have to say about it? So these were several of the factors that led to us beginning the conversation around diversity and inclusion.
Thanks for sharing that, Erin. And it's really interesting that you talked about that there was vandalism outside of the commission's headquarters office because I know other agencies and other jurisdictions in the United States experienced similar kinds of vandalism to their offices. And what you in Virginia have been able to do is to transform something that was destructive, that vandalism, into something positive. And I think that's something that's really commendable. The other comment that I can't help but make is that, you know, you referenced the George Floyd murder last year and everything that has evolved in the years since. And President Biden went to Tulsa and for the first time recognized the Tulsa massacre. And I think it continues to demonstrate that these issues are going on in organizations and in communities around the United States. And I appreciate both you, Aaron, and Debbie being available to help in some ways guide us within the workers' compensation community. So I understand that you had a town hall and that these issues were put on it, but you all at the commission decided to make this a very intentional discussion and a series of continued conversations. When the commission decided to move forward in talking and taking action on diversity and inclusion, Debbie, could you share your thoughts on and advice for organizations who feel there might be hesitancy or fear about taking on these conversations? What advice would you give to them?
Well, I would say the short answer is be genuine, be transparent, recognize that people come to these conversations from many different perspectives, and we want to hear everybody and recognize that everybody is worthy of respect. You know, the people listening to this can't see me, but I'm in the senior citizen class, a real baby boomer, and Aaron is not. And so one of the great things about our relationship and our conversations about this for me was a recognition that there are real generational differences in how we approach these issues and in our life experiences. You know, when you lived through the 1960s, I think legitimately people think we've come such a long way. And from there we have, but there's still a ways to go. There's still work to do. So recognizing that people have legitimate perspectives, legitimate fear. Nobody wants to be a victim of cancel culture. No one wants to offend their coworkers, say the wrong thing. So we acknowledged all of these problems, I would say, acknowledged all of the perspectives and asked for everyone's help moving forward because we need all of us, right? Nobody can do this by themselves.
Aaron, do you have additional thoughts from your experience in beginning this conversation?
I do. I feel like fear, as Debbie mentioned, being part of what made people hesitant, has also been what has led us to this point in time. You know, fear of the unknown or fear of the other has created a bit of a divide. And really, deep down inside, we're all human. We are all people and we are all deserving and worthy of the same opportunities and the same respect and the same treatment. And so coming to that point, you know, where we have to finally say enough is enough, let's just have these conversations. Let's get comfortable being uncomfortable because we haven't done that up until now, but it's time that we start doing it so that we can get past this barrier and past this point and hopefully have that breakthrough where we're a lot less uncomfortable moving forward a lot more of the time.
I think the comments that you shared, Debbie and Aaron, and this underlying fear that I think we all have, our reaction as humans when we fear something is to avoid it, because fear is scary. And as you said, Aaron, is uncomfortable. And creating this safe space, which it sounds as if you really were intentional about in Virginia, and you were successful at creating a safe space to say, we understand this might be scary, but we're going to go forward and support one another. And when we overcome, we're going to overcome together. I think what a powerful statement to everyone in your organization, and what an important foundation that you're laying for action to continue. And maybe, Aaron, you could talk about action. I think is really a necessary thing that has to come next, that you have to listen and understand the concerns and the experience of individuals, but you have to demonstrate that you're taking action toward addressing those as an organization, as a business, as, you know, colleagues and coworkers. So could you talk a little bit more, Aaron, about how you demonstrated action within the commission after this initial set of conversations?
Well, I think Debbie and I did this together, through our conversations and, you know, daily chats that we typically have. This conversation came up over and over again. And Debbie, being the fearless leader and boomer that she is, she said, we have to do something about this. And we need to do something about this. Are you on board with me to talk to the leaders of the commission, our senior leadership? And of course I said yes. And so it was at this point that Debbie actually sent an email to our executive director and asked that she convene the commissioners, and we begin a conversation about what, if anything, they were willing to do and what we could do as the commission to begin addressing the issues in a more formal way. So that had some, as you mentioned before, intentional process behind it.
And Debbie, my understanding is that you have now incorporated diversity and inclusion into the commission's strategic plan. Could you speak a little bit more to that?
Sure. We held these small group dialogues, and the senior leadership was from the outset supportive. And I'm going to say that was critical in the commission's ability to take action. They were committed to not only talking the talk, but walking the walk. So one of the questions we asked in the small group dialogues, you know, was, what can we do? Well, what are your ideas? And we had over 100 employees participate in these. So we came up with a lot of ideas, and we actually had to add additional sessions on. They were so popular. At the end, we created a strategic plan that the commissioners and our chief deputy commissioner and executive director all endorsed. It was presented to our leadership team, to all of our deputy commissioners, and then implemented. And we kind of categorized things or action items by group. One of them, for example, was an ongoing dialogue or discussion initiative. Another on training and education. Another on informal dispute resolution. Another one on outreach, because one area in which we recognize we have some deficiency in diversity itself is in our judicial division. Our judges come from the workers' comp bar, which is not very diverse in Virginia. So that committee is really looking outward to law schools, to colleges, to bar associations to try to encourage a broader participation in the bar itself so that our candidates for the judgeships will also in the future hopefully present a broader perspective. And Erin, I'm forgetting one, aren't I? There were five.
Yes. The Events Committee, which is a committee that's goal is to host different events, either spotlighting individual diversity among employees and or different events around months celebrating diverse cultures.
I think from a leadership perspective, making that statement that you have five concentrated areas that are a priority for the commission, that really links back to what you said. It's not just talking the talk, but walking the walk. And I think that in terms of creating that continued environment of trust and respect within an organization, that you have to demonstrate you're going to respond and then respond. It's not just about a statement. It's not just about listening. It's about making changes for the future. And I would assume you would both agree that what you hope to accomplish through these initiatives is to make change into the future.
Absolutely.
And I've already learned so much myself from some of the things we've done. That events committee, I'm sorry I forgot them, Jerry, who leads that committee, if she's listening to this, they're great. Okay, we've done a bingo for Women's History Month. They just did a presentation that I attended on Asian American Pacific Islanders Month. This started out as a conversation about race in response to a specific collective trauma, but it has really become conversations about so much more.
And the beauty of having these five concentrated areas of ideas and initiatives that we are either presenting or hosting or moving forward on is that they're all made up of committees that either staff has volunteered to be a part of, or we have sought people to come and join us to be a part of. So in a way, we are implementing inclusion in just that very step, you know, having people work together on projects and on events that they may not have otherwise worked with has been very beneficial because people have been able to learn from one another. They've been able to hear different perspectives. They've been able to share ideas and then put those into action. And so we're already seeing that initial step of inclusion kind of really working.
As Michael Scott would say, that's a win-win-win. Bad office joke there, sorry. However, I mean, I think so fitting for this situation is that you're modeling everything that you hope the commission will be. And it's becoming that by the way you designed and developed and took steps to implement everything that we've heard about in our conversation. I will share personally, Debbie and Erin, that we've had a lot of conversations on your work and on this topic as we prepared for the forum and as we prepared for the podcast. I have learned a lot. And one of the things that I think is really evident is that you both have invested a lot of time, but care into making sure that you got this right. And so I'm going to ask, Debbie, could you share what you have personally gained through this process?
Well, I've learned a lot, as I've already said, but in addition to that, I think it's really given me the opportunity to grow as a person. This was scary for me when it all first started. But I felt that we were called as leaders, as public servants, as professionals in a service industry to do our part. And so it's been personally very rewarding and also given us an opportunity to create friendships, networks of personal relationships throughout the commission that we never would have had, that I never would have had, but for this.
And Erin, how about you? What have you gained personally through these conversations and initiatives?
I have gained a new sense of purpose, which let's just say wasn't something that I thought, you know, I would commit to 5-10 years ago. Being a young Black woman, I have seen this type of inequality before where it's not been so explicit. It's very subtle. And seeing it time and time again through my own personal experiences and on TV and in the news, but with the death of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Philando Castillo and all of these other young people, people of color who have lost their lives, I finally decided maybe I should do something also. Maybe I should commit to having a conversation with others about what it's like and about what it means for us, because it means very different things. You know, just walking through life, there are certain things that we have to be aware of that others do not have to be aware of. The way we carry ourselves, the things we carry, you know, what those look like, the things we wear, the way we talk to others, who we talk to, when we talk to people. There are so many things that we have to be aware of because that's what we've grown up knowing, that others, quite honestly, other white people, they don't understand. They have not the slightest bit of understanding of what it's kind of like to have to be on our P's and Q's at all times. And so I think this has given me the purpose to say, I want to help change. And what I'm sharing with you, how I've had to live, how I've adapted, hopefully will help you understand. And then we can help break down some of those barriers. So it's been a purposeful, personal journey for me.
I don't think there's anything else to say there, Erin, except thank you. Thank you for being open to sharing your experiences, because you are exactly right. Being a white woman, I don't understand what it's like to have the experiences that you have had on a day in and day out basis. And so thank you for helping be our teacher and for sharing that. And I think that that is something that, whether you're doing this in an organizational setting like the commission is, or within your business, or just in your own neighborhoods and your own communities, we can always learn something from the experiences of others, whether it's people of different races, different faiths, different educational backgrounds, different orientations. It doesn't matter. As you mentioned, Erin, we are all humans. And when we seek to have positive human connections, we are all better for it. I did want to ask, in talking about how you approach this, and really, I think, Erin and Debbie, you're trying to talk with us today and talk to the IIBC community so that they have the tools and the courage to begin these conversations. Would you have any recommendations or resources that you would share with the IIBC community?
Yes, I can think of a few things. One of the things we did in the beginning in setting up the small groups was to use trained mediators as the facilitators for those small groups. That was intentional because mediators are trained to create safe spaces to help people engage in difficult conversations and move through them in a positive way. So that's one recommendation or resource that I would recommend. In terms of kind of basic education, one of our initiatives is a book club that our chairman is sponsoring, leading. And we've read a couple of books that were really helpful and just engaging in the dialogue with that small group about the books has been a great experience and one that I would think any other organization could easily model. Just set up a book club and read some hard books, read some fun books. We've read Funny and Farsi, which is hilarious, and Cast, which is sad, but so educational.
I would also say that if you're not a reader, you know, you can always make it a point to educate yourselves by watching movies that have been inspired by Black life experiences or movies directed by Black directors. I believe there's a movie called One Night in Miami, Amazon Prime, and that kind of goes through the story of four Black men, you know, in the 1960s, I think it is. And so that is eye-opening, wildly eye-opening. And there are also other movies like Judas and the Black Messiah and Soul on Disney, if you have kids and are interested in kind of that young animated movie. So there are other kind of tools and resources out there for parties to take a look at if they are not readers or don't like to do research. There are other fun ways to educate yourselves.
That's a great tip, Erin. I think that just trying to experience entertainment and deliberately say, I want to watch something from a different perspective is a really, I think, simple way to have a different experience. And that's what watching a movie is all about, is trying to understand someone else's experience or listen to a story that's different from our own. Also a great way, Erin, to engage your kids in the conversation is to seek out movies and shows that come from different backgrounds. Another thing I would throw in there as a resource is if you don't have time to watch a full movie or aren't a reader, podcasts are also a great resource. There are so many different podcasts out there right now that are confronting diversity, inclusion, and equity initiatives, and that expose ourselves to different voices and different perspectives. So I think that's another avenue for people exploring these conversations. Debbie, and you wanted to share?
Yeah, one last resource. That's probably worth mentioning. In Virginia, statewide, after we began our diversity and inclusion initiative, the legislature passed a mandatory DEI initiative for all state agencies, and that office is creating some resources. My guess is that there are many similar initiatives across the country, and an internet search will point you to something in your jurisdiction if you're interested.
And we could do a little crowdsourcing of the listeners of Accidentally. If you have a great book, podcast, movie, resource on diversity, inclusion, and equity, please send it to jwolf@iaiabc.org. We'll compile a list and make it available on the Accidentally website, because recommendations from listeners would be great. Even though you're at the beginning, and it's been about a year since the death of George Floyd and a little less than a year since you started this effort, could you talk about the impact that you've seen on the commission's work environment and culture in that short time?
I think we are kinder to each other, and as a group, more trusting of each other, which enables us to have hard conversations about lots of things. We can agree to disagree and respect each other.
Erin, is there anything you wanted to share about what you've seen from this initial work?
Well, I briefly touched on it before when speaking about the involvement of employees on committees or working on projects. And this has mostly been done by way of video conferencing or the platform specifically that we use, WebEx, since we have been in quarantine due to COVID-19 since the beginning of this initiative. But I think that is extra special to show that we've made these connections and we've been able to work on projects together and learn from one another in a way that we wouldn't ordinarily do in person, or maybe not even as frequently as we would have done in person or by region. The commission has 5 different regional offices all over the state of Virginia, and just the ability to connect with those in far Southwest Virginia or Northern Virginia or the beach has been, you know, harder in years past. But by being able to hop on a video, we've been able to have that instant connection and work with one another to accomplish goals, whether they're long-term or short-term, whether they're directly related to work comp work that we're doing or administrative, kind of this diversity and inclusion initiative work. We've been able to make these connections where we wouldn't have been able to before.
I also understand that the Virginia Workers' Compensation Commission was recognized as one of the top workplaces in Richmond, Virginia. And I'm sure that that recognition was in part because of the strong culture and environment that you're fostering at the commission. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. It's quite an honor.
It is a very big honor. And I expect that because of the work that you're doing now and the strength that you're fostering among your employees, that you'll continue to be recognized in those ways. As we close up this conversation, I wanted to ask each of you, if you had a crystal ball and could look ahead 5 years, what do you hope to see as the results of your focus on diversity and inclusion? Erin?
My hope for the commission would be to see a diverse judicial component, judges and deputy commissioners, even commissioners of different races, different colors, different backgrounds. That would be one beautiful shining piece of that crystal ball that I would love to see. Additionally, I would like to see just an appreciation for each other and this continued conversation and more of it to a point where it's no longer uncomfortable and no longer scary. That we are just talking with one another and sharing life experiences.
And Debbie, what would you like to see in your crystal ball?
I would like to see this be normal, that you wouldn't be interviewing us because everybody would be doing this.
All of those goals, I think, can only come to fruition by putting in the work now. And by doing that work, by tackling the scary topics and by being uncomfortable, we can be agents, and you as the Virginia Workers' Compensation Commission can be a model for the change that can happen. And I am confident that in 5 years, when we reconvene this conversation, we will have probably, you will have learned a lot of things. hopefully the IABC will continue to learn and ingrain these kinds of discussions and these efforts into our operations, because it really is just about serving and being welcoming of the experiences and the lessons that each of us can bring. Any last thoughts, Erin or Debbie?
This has been a purposeful but fun journey, as bad as that is to say that covering a topic like this has been fun. But what makes it fun for me is that I have been able to learn from others and that I can see my personal growth every day, and I can see personal growth in others. And so to me, that is powerful, it's beautiful, and that's what makes this fun for me. Like Debbie said, I hope in the future this becomes the normal and that we can see the beauty in everybody.
I think we all just have to do our part, right? None of us has to do it by ourselves. We all have a part to play. We just need to do our piece.
Debbie and Erin, thank you for joining the IAIABC's podcast, Accidentally. Thank you for motivating the IAIABC community to begin conversations within their organizations about diversity, inclusion, and equity in a business that serves people. We are all able to do our jobs better. We are better colleagues, we are better friends when we find a space to be uncomfortable, but have the openness to learn. Thank you for sharing Virginia's story and journey in this area. And I look forward to continuing to learn with you as we tackle this in the future. I want to thank listeners for joining us for Accidentally. We'd love to hear your feedback. If you have thoughts for future episodes, please email jwolf@iaiabc.org. Cheers, Jen.